You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee Church, visit vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now here's this week's message.
Hey, speaking of opening, so we're continuing our series of Art of Neighboring. And what I wanted to do this morning is I want to read to you a passage that we're going to look at today. This is the last sermon of the series Art of Neighboring, last talk. And I want to look at a text, and when we do that, I'm just going to ask you just to relax, close your eyes, and just let me read it to you, and sort of put yourself, use your imagination a little bit. I love doing these exercises when you can kind of just put yourself in the story being read to you, and I think oftentimes Jesus sort of shimmers some things, pops some things in the story for you. So what I'm going to ask you to do is just sort of close your eyes, relax, don't fall asleep, but relax and almost imagine the movie being played in your mind, and you're one of the characters in the movie, okay? So let me read to you. I'm going to read from the NIV. It's Luke 7, 37 through 50. Don't look it up because you're not going to read it. All right. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisees who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Today we're going to talk about neighboring. How's your neighboring going? Anybody fill out your chart yet? Nobody? All right, that's fine. There's no judgment here. But hopefully you've... did anyone learn a new name yet? Yay, good. We got a new name. New name, awesome. I'm hoping that you... this isn't something, just so you know, church, this isn't something we're like just talking about. Like, we actually want to do this. Like, so, you know, start with a name. Start with a name. We really want to do this. We don't want to be a church that just talks about stuff. Jesus doesn't just talk about stuff. He often tells us to actually do some things too. I have a story to share. It's an Uber story. Every once in a while, I have an Uber story to share. And you know, with Uber, you don't know where you're going. Ever. you get this ride. It tells you the person's name. And it tells me where they're located. It doesn't tell me where they're going. And I don't know where they're going until they're in my car, and then I swipe, and then it says, "Oh, we're going to the airport," or "We're going to Menomonee Falls," or whatever, right? I don't know until they're in the car. And so I get this call. I get this, you know, it comes up on my app, and I accept the ride, and it tells me where I'm going, and it's way out of my way. Like, it's not a great ride because I have to drive, like, 10 minutes just to get there. And that's always a bummer. And, So, because you don't get really paid until the person gets in your car, So 10 minutes out of my way, I get there and I'm at the house and I'm looking at the house. I'm like, I got the right address. And they have 3 minutes to get to your car. So I'm looking, I'm waiting. And I notice there's a guy about like four cars in front of me, and he's just standing there, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at the house, and I'm like, this is weird. So he starts to walk over, and I can't remember his name, but he comes over to the window, and I'm like, oh, are you Joe, my passenger? I thought you were here. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you lived down there. He goes, oh, no. Yeah, I do live there. Yeah, I'm Joe, but I don't really need a ride. And I'm sitting here going, you know, you called an Uber, right? Like, cause that's what we do. We like take people places, you know? And he's like, no, I don't need a ride. I need to jump. What? He goes, no, I need you. Could you jump my car? I'm like, you know, this is an Uber, right? Like, I don't get paid unless I take you somewhere. Can I take you to work? And he goes, well, I don't get paid if you don't jump my car. And I'm like, this isn't my job. Like, what? So I was super irritated. But it reminded me of this neighboring thing. Like, I wanted to say to the guy, like, dude, do you know a neighbor? Like, this is a problem. Like, you knock on someone's door that you know and say, hey, neighbor, you know, whatever your neighbor name is, you know, Kate or Karen or Carl, whatever. Like, hey, can you help me out? I need a jump. This guy had no idea. Like, he didn't know a neighbor, so he had to call an Uber. That's kind of messed up. And so when we talk about this idea of neighboring and that Jesus actually said to neighbor, it's not only that, it's also like a really good idea to know your neighbor, no matter who they are, right? No matter what they are, no matter what they think about or what opinions they are or what race they are, or what political views they have, like it's really important to know and love our neighbor. So to bring us all back to our scripture for today, Jesus gets invited to this party. It's basically he gets invited to a pastor's house for a party. And it seems that Jesus was either, in the whole New Testament, he was either going to a party, he was leaving a party, or he was starting a party. You've heard me say that a ton of times. He really liked to party. If you actually look at the texture, he was always going somewhere, and there happened to be a party that would break out. Okay? But in this text, he's invited to a party, and it's a religious leader who's a little skeptical of who Jesus is. So in Luke 7, verses 37, it says, a woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the first house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume as she stood behind him at his feet, and she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair. She kissed, she poured perfume on them. And she's basically crashing a banquet is basically what's going on. There's a banquet, that's the party. And banquets back then are different than banquets now. I don't know if you've ever been to a banquet now, but it's very, you know, it's invitation, right? It's usually you rent a space, right? It's private, invitation only. You know, you may get dressed up. But then it was actually, back then, it was very public. It was usually in a courtyard, and it was common for people to see what was going on in the banquet. So oftentimes you have banquet crashers back then, right? We have wedding crashers, I guess, sort of, but very, very different now, right? So back then they had banquet crashers. And so we're told about this woman. And we're told a few things about her. We're told that she's a sinner, which often in the Bible, when they refer to a woman as a sinner or a sinful woman, it's sort of code word for that she's probably a prostitute. She's probably a prostitute, and everybody knows it. And at some point before this encounter, maybe even that day, this woman probably heard Jesus talking, and it hit her, like really powerfully. And so something he said turned her world upside down probably that day. And she's thinking, I could go to that banquet. I could get in there. I could go over. I could just kiss his feet, wash his feet. Washing feet back then was a great deal, a sign of respect. But to kiss somebody's feet, that's like an utter, like, just abandonment, right? Admiration, reckless love. So this woman walks into this party. She goes through this courtyard to the table where Jesus and Simon are sitting, and everybody's watching. She kneels down at Jesus' feet to kiss them. Jesus has been drenched by this woman's tears. Then she begins to dry them off with her hair. She's got this alabaster jar of ointment, probably the most valuable thing that she owns. She empties the whole thing out. She pours out her entire life right there at Jesus' feet. Because in her mind, this is a holy man. She has, and she's a sinful person. So she goes and she puts all of her attention in this act at his feet. She pours herself out in love and in gratitude. And then there's Simon. Simon is there too. And he's watching the whole thing sort of unfold. Now, this is his party. This is his banquet. But Simon doesn't really see what's happening. In verse 39, it says this. It says that the Pharisees who had invited him saw this. And he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. Now, I don't know if he caught that. Like, Simon said that in his head, right? He said that in his head. He said it to himself. Simon watches all of this, and he thinks to himself in his head. And Jesus, right, he's the real deal. Even if what Simon's saying is, if Jesus is the real deal, if he really is a prophet, he's going to know who this person is. And he's saying this in his head. This is my favorite part. In verse 39, it says, Simon says to himself, he's thinking in his mind, and then Jesus, he responds to what Simon is thinking. Dude, like, really? Like, wow. It's got to be freaking out, right? Like, I just said something in my head, and then Jesus responds to it. Wow, right? So this, and then what does Jesus do? He does what Jesus always does. He's a masterful communicator. And so he communicates in story. And so he says to Simon, after he reads his mind, he says, two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, and the other 51 denarii is the equivalent of one day's wage. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more so today? So Jesus' parable sounds something like this, if we were to sort of monitor. There's two people. They're both struggling. They're both in debt. Okay, the first person is basically falling behind, like on his phone bill, made some poor decisions, and owes a few thousand dollars in debt. The second person, lots of misfortune, poor decision making, on the verge of losing their house, cars being repossessed, several maxed out credit cards, probably owes like up to $200,000 worth of debt. Right? And there's a big difference, right? Both are struggling, but there's a big difference. The bank calls and says both debts are canceled. Simon, which one is their world going to be turned upside down? Which person? Is it the little debt guy or is it the big debt guy? And Simon responds, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt was canceled. And Jesus says, oh, you have judged correctly. Gold star, Simon. Nice job, right? A plus, or what do they call it now? It's not, you don't get A's anymore. You get like advanced, right? No longer proficient. PRADs. I had to figure out that whole grade card thing. Anyway, A, gold star, AD, whatever. Best in class. Now, up to this point, the conversation has been between Jesus and Simon, right? It's been between Jesus and Simon. Then Jesus turns to this woman and says, look at her, he says. This is it. This is the line. Simon, do you see this woman? Simon, do you see this woman? See, Simon didn't see her. He saw somebody who's way beneath him. He saw somebody he'd rather not have sort of in his world. Somebody that didn't matter to him, to the society. Someone who crashed his banquet. Simon doesn't really see her. And Jesus says to Simon, You gave me no water. She bathed my feet in her tears and dried them off with her hair. You didn't even kiss me on the cheek like an equal would have, or on the hand like a student would to a rabbi. She has not stopped kissing my feet since I walked in. You didn't even anoint my head with common olive oil when I came in your home, which was tradition back then. She anointed not my head, but my feet, and she doesn't use the common olive oil. She uses the most valuable thing in her possession. Simon, do you see this woman? This is the question. Do we see what's really going on around us? In verse 39, Simon says to himself, he's thinking in his mind, whoops, I'm sorry, wrong page. Do you see me? Are you present enough in the moment? Are you present in what's going on right in front of you? We need to learn to see people. We need to keep our eyes open. Many of us are failing to see moments that are all around us every day, moments with our neighbors. Simon developed this ability to disengage from what's going on around him. And there are a number of reasons why we disengage. Rebecca talked a lot about that last week when she talked about being hurried, right? Being hurried, having no margins, and the sort of sickness of busyness, right? We get caught up in our own world, our schedules, our events. And I think we close the doors that are open for a moment because we see that person across the street and we notice something's different about them and we kind of go about our day. Now, we're moving. We've been talking about that a lot the last, what feels like forever. And we're moving into a neighborhood with new neighbors. With new neighbors. And there are going to be neighbors in that new neighborhood that are different than us. That are different than us. There's different economic situations. There are different ethnicities. There are different education levels. There are lots of differences as we move into this new neighborhood. But make no mistake about it. Like, I believe that God has placed us in that neighborhood. There's actually a God story I wanted to kind of share. Some of you know the story, but we used to volunteer at that meal site years ago. And it's funny, the people that go to that meal site, they call that place the church. There's about 100 to 150 people that eat there every day except for Saturday. In the basement that St. Vincent de Paul Society runs, and they call that building the church. There has never been a church there, but they call that building their church. And the staff there that serve the meals, they laugh because they say, oh, we're coming, I'm sorry I didn't make church yesterday. And they're like, again, there's no church here, people. Like, this is, we feed you meals. There's no church. And since we've sort of finalized this move, the staff there have been saying, hey, actually, you know what? We're a church now. Guess what? Well, there's one moving upstairs. So, like, come Sunday at 10, right? And it's amazing. There's been so many God stories in this move. And God's placed you not only where you currently live, and he's called you to neighbor where you live, but he's called you here too. Like, this is your church, this is your community, and the neighborhood around the church is also your neighbors. And we love them, and we serve them, and we need to learn to see them. But oftentimes we make the jump in our mind, and we put a label, and we detach, right? We make a label, and we detach. We close this door out of fear. We categorize people based on a narrative that has been downloaded into our brain through social media, the news, or friends and family. Those stories just play over and over in our head and sort of train us to think a certain way. And it causes us to sort of lose sight of what's really going on. We believe the worst. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have like discernment about the kinds of relationships we engage in. However, we often use discernment as a crutch that allows us to not engage and kind of hide in our house, right? So when I ask a lot of questions to strangers all the time, and I've shared some in the past when I drive around, I ask questions. So I did this once before. I asked my riders what they thought good neighbors were. And so I asked again, you know, what makes a good neighbor? And my Uber riders suggested these few things. First, I asked, define the perfect neighbor. I had one guy this week say, perfect neighbor is one that I never see. And I'm like, that's awful. That's not a neighbor. Like, that's you living in the world alone. Like, what is that? He was kind of a grumpy guy. But most of them said, you know, respectful, quiet, I have friendly, understanding their boundaries. The big one was that they take care of the outside of their home. So like the yard, they trim the bushes, they have nice flowers. I had one person actually say they wanted a family with lots of kids because they had lots of kids. So that was important to them. A good neighbor would be great to have if they had kids that our kids could play together. This has always been a theme every time I ask it. Same thing when I did it last year. When you pick up somebody single, often they're like, I would really like to have like a hot single person next to me. Like that would be great. And then I asked, you know, have you had a neighbor that fit their description? Like, do you have someone like that in your neighborhood? And the answer is always no. Always no. They are like, no, I don't have the ideal neighbor. I don't have the ideal neighbor. No, none of the, they're not the things that I listed, you know, of what I thought was, what I define as a great neighbor. I don't have any of those great neighbors. And then I said, well, what's the scariest thing about getting to know your neighbor? What's the scary? Can you think of the scariest thing? See if some of your answers are the same. Some of the scariest things. Finding that your neighbor has like opposite political values. Right, opinions. That was like a big one. That's like the number one, that you're living next to the person who votes completely different than you, right? That freaked people out. And what if, the other thing is, what if you, this was a lot of the hot single people would say this, who one of the hot single people, I should say. Their biggest thing, what if they had gotten into a relationship and then they broke up? And now you're your neighbor, it's created this awkward tension, weirdness. Kind of, that was their biggest fear about getting to know their neighbors. What if they got into a relationship and then it went bad? The scary thing about neighboring is that like your neighbor's always there, right? It's not like you go on a missions trip and you're like, hey, you're awesome, and then you leave. Like your neighbor is always there, good or bad, right? So it can be kind of scary. But Jesus is saying that this is not just a good thing, that we're actually supposed to do this. We're supposed to step over that threshold of fear. We're supposed to be present in the moment with our neighbors. We're supposed to see our neighbors for who He created them to be, not what we put on them, right? So what are we supposed to do about this? We're encouraging you to step out, to step into that, to step into relationship with your neighbors. Throw parties. Invite a neighbor over for dinner. Some of you aren't party people. You're like, oh, I'm not doing the party thing, Dave. That is not me. That's okay. That's totally okay. That's totally okay. You have to operate out of who you are. I always tell people that. You have to operate how God created you, right? I am not a book club person. I'm not. But I know people who are. And there are other people that are neighbors that are too, and they would love to be in a book club with you, but don't invite me. That's not my jam, right? So, but maybe that's your thing. I know that I know some people have connected with neighbors by walking their dog. Just by walking their dog, they're building relationships. If you live in Bayview and you have a dog, forget it. You're going to have a neighbor list that's a mile long and build friendships. It'll be awesome because everybody here has a dog and they walk around like crazy and they talk to each other on the corner. It's awesome. Don't tell my family that because they want me to get a dog and I'm kind of hesitant right now. But gardening, barbecue, books, music, movies. There are so many things that God has created you that you have interest in. Find out what's a common with your neighbor and step into it. You don't have to throw a party, but here's what you do have to do is you have to actually see who your neighbors are. See who your neighbors are. Be present in that moment. Be present to who they are and step into relationship. Start with introduction. Hi, my name is, right? And invite them in. This should be an amazing experience for you. And not only am I super excited to see what happens in your neighborhood where you live, but I'm so excited to go on this journey of neighboring to where we are going as a church. We want to see all different types of people in this church. You know that we celebrate diversity in this church, that we absolutely love all the different cultures and ethnicities. I love the fact that we represent so many different types of people with so many different types of backgrounds. We have different ages. We have different careers in here. I mean, I look around and I remember a year ago, or maybe a year and a half ago, I remember we were really, really small. And I remember Yami came up to me and she goes, "Oh, it's okay. There'll be more people that come," you know, because she said that I looked a little upset because we were so small. But I was getting a little emotional, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm not upset about the numbers. I could care less about that." I was looking out like there was such a diverse group of people in the room. There's so many different people, all trying to bump closer to Jesus, and I got to be part of that. It was so awesome. It was so awesome. And when I think about our new space, there are so many people that we get to connect with, that we get to go on a journey with Jesus, with them. But we have to see who's in front of us to do it. We have to see. We have to recognize. We can't get lost in the banquet, right, as Simon. We can't get lost in this thing that we're doing. We always have to see what's in front of us. We have to see people. We have to see people. That's what he's called us to do. Why don't we stand? As always, we're gonna do worship and just kind of engage what God's doing. And we have a couple ways we do it. We do it singing. We do it with communion. There's an open table in the back if you're a follower of Jesus. And I want to encourage you also, we'll have people in the back to pray for you for anything today, just anything at all. Like if you've got some ailments or stuff you're going through or God's bubbling stuff up, like get prayer today. Today's talk felt a little all over the place for me, and part of it is because we've been working so hard on the building. But I don't, if I'm honest with you right now, like one of the things that just really spoke to me is that, you know, oftentimes, true confession, I get caught up in an event. I get caught up on this thing that sort of gets created in my head, you know, what I think is important, and it is. But sometimes we get caught up in that thing and we lose sight of the woman at your feet, you know, at the woman who is over at Jesus' feet, just like pouring out, and you don't see it. And that's the main event. Not the banquet. The main event is that woman. The main event is the prostitute at Jesus' feet, the sinner at Jesus' feet. That's the main event. The main event is your neighbor who is struggling financially. The main event is that coworker who drives you absolutely up the wall and you don't know what to do with. That's the main event. God has called you. If you're a follower of Jesus, God has called you to recognize that there's these moments in front of you that go unseen, unnoticed. And for him And for you, those unseen, unnoticed moments, that's the main event. That's the celebration. That's what we want this church to be. Not to get caught up in programs and buildings, and we're really excited. We're really blessed to be moving into a new building. But the main event is people. Is people, engaging people and loving people really well. And through that relationship, you become part of their story and they become part of yours. And you sit together side by side and you journey to this wonderful Savior, this amazing God who loves and cares for you deeply and is alive. Let's celebrate that today. As we worship, just think about those moments, those true moments, those unseen people that may have been around in your circles, and pray about where we're going, that we never lose sight of what the real moment is. Let's worship.